Thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak here. I'm going to talk about a joint work with Thomas Thiemann, which has recently appeared on the archive under the number shown on the top. Please go to the next slide. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. So please go to slide number two. So since canonical and covariant LQG are based on very similar principles, it is often emphasized that they are actually two different sides of the same metal. However, it has been never proven that they are really defining the same theory. But an heuristic argument that they do is the following. So if we look at the time evolution of a spin network, we obtain some sort of a spin foam, which is the defining object for the covariant theory. So as many of you know, the spin network is just given by a graph embedded in a spatial hypersurface sigma, whose links are colored by irreducible representation of the canonical gauge group. That is SU2, and whose nodes are colored by intertwiners. So to each of these spin network functions, you can associate a function by taking the holonomy along the link L in the affine representation and contacting with the intertwiners. So the set of all spin network functions span then the gauge invariant kinematical Hilbert space of the canonical theory. On the other hand, a spin foam is just given by a two-complex whose faces are colored by the irreducible representation of the covariant gauge group. This is, in the following, this will be always assumed to be spin force, and I'm only going to talk about the Euclidean spin foam model. And the internal edges of the spin foam are then again covered by intertwiners, and to each of these spin foams cover, we can associate an amplitude defined by some overall possible coloring, and product of the vertex amplitudes and the phase amplitude. So the boundary of such a two-complex is again given by a sort of spin network, where the graphs are then given by all the edges which are just contained in one single phase, and all without vertices which are just contained in one single internal edge. So in the picture on the right-hand side, this would be one of the tetragraph on the bottom of the picture, and the tetragraph with the additional link M on the top of the picture. So another hint that these theories are actually the same comes from the fact that if we look at the modern spin foam model, then we can show that for a certain choice of parameters, the Hilbert space induced on the boundary graph of the foam can be actually identified with the graph Hilbert spaces of the canonical theory. So in some sense, we can think of this amplitude set kappa as a transition amplitude between an ingoing spin network and an outgoing spin network. So please go to the next slide. However, since the Hamiltonian is a constraint, it would not really generate a time evolution, but this would rather give rise to a sort of delta distribution, where we can think of the spin foams and the amplitude that kappa as some sort of Feynman diagram for the canonical theory for loop quantum gravity. This is actually the main idea going back to Reisenberger and Covelli, from which the spin foam model started and the covariant business took off. So it has been developed since then very fastly. So if we take this idea seriously, that if we sum over all possible forms, we should get some sort of delta for the Hamiltonian constraint, then we could try to use this to define physical scalar product for the canonical theory by taking some sort of rigging map eta from the spin network functions Ps and Ps prime, by summing over all complexes which we can fit between the graphs on which the spin networks S and S prime art defined. Then the following, I want to make this idea clear and analyze the resulting object. The main results of our work are that it is indeed possible to construct some sort of a rigging map following these ideas. If we take the KKL expansion of the EPRL model and FK model, which allow to consider arbitrary boundary graphs in the bond. Since the sum over all forms is certainly very hard to guide, we developed a formalism how to generate arbitrary forms out of a given set of forms. And during this analysis, we can identify an elementary spin form matrix, transfer matrix, which exactly allows to generate all kinds of different forms. Unfortunately, when we analyze the resulting object further, we find that our postulated map does not really define a projector and therefore is not a true rigging map. However, this case is not it's not desperate, because it might be very well possible that by modifying our rigging map that one might end up indeed with a physical scalar product for the canonical theory. So please go to slide number 5. The rest of the talk will be divided into 3 parts. In the first part, I will construct this spin form rigging map and analyze its properties. In the second part, I will discuss why this proposed rigging map is not a proper one. And in the third part, I will discuss what could be the possible causes and give a brief outlook on further questions. So I will start by introducing the basic concept a bit more clearly, that is rigging maps and forms. So please go to slide number 6. In principle, when we have constraint system, we have in principle to face the problem that zero does not lie in the point spectrum of the given set of constraints, or as in LQG, that we only have one single state, the vacuum state, which solves all the constraints directly. That means if we apply the constraint operators on this state, it gives zero. So certainly a space with just a single state is not very interesting, so one tries to look for weaker solution to the constraint system. The weak solution is an element of an algebraic dual, D star king, which is the algebraic dual of some dense domain in the kinematical Hilbert space, such that it fulfills the following piece, that is, namely, if we act with our strength on this dual solution, then it annihilates that in the sense that here the C star defines the dual action on the element L, so that then if you contract it with the normal element of the dense domain in the kinematical Hilbert space, it acts on this as the Hermitian adjoint. And so if this is really a weak solution, then L of C dagger F would give zero for all elements for all F in the sense in the kinematical Hilbert space. So now we have two problems. First of all, we need to find all those states which obey that. And secondly, we cannot use the original scalar product in the kinematical Hilbert space. Since the Ls are in general really in the algebraic dual and not in the topological dual. This can be understood very easily, because if they would be in a topological dual, then by the theorem of Mies, they could be again identified with elements in the kinematical Hilbert space. So this means we also need to construct a new scalar product on the space. So for a well-behaved system, this can be done by constructing a so-called rigging map. This is a map which takes an element of the kinematical Hilbert space into the algebraic dual, such that the contraction SRS prime S defines a Z-cleaving linear form, so that we can use it as a scalar product. And that if if we act with the constraint on F, that it gives zero for all F. We can then define the physical Hilbert space as the completion of the image of eta with respect to the scalar product. So now unfortunately, does not fall into the category of well-behaved constraints, because the constraints generate a Lie algebraic rather than a Lie algebra. So this means we have structure functions instead of structure constants. So even though we cannot be sure that such a Ricking map exists, there is no theorem saying that it doesn't exist, so we can still hope that we are able to can construct such a Ricking map. And the hope is exactly to construct them with the help of spin forms. So please go to the next slide. So the Euclidean spin form model starts from an NBF type action plus a simplicity constraint, where here M is our spacetime, B is a bivector on the spacetime, F is the curvature of the spin 4 connection on M, and beta is the Barbero-Inierzi parameter. We can then discretize this action on a given triangulation of our spacetime, and then we obtain an action which depends on the two complex kappa C dual to this triangulation. Then this action or the path integral for this action can be pre-quantized, leading to the BF amplitude that depends again on the dual two complex and of course of on the in and out space. So in some given boundary Hilbert space. So in order to restrict it to a path integral for gravity, we still need to implement the simplicity constraint. And in the new models, so the EPL-FK models, this is done weakly and then leads to an amplitude, again, depending on the dual two complex in the in and out state. Well, and the amplitude is essentially, again, given by a sum over all colorings, where the simplicity constraint restricts this coloring to a specific class. And the phase amplitude, an edge amplitude QE, and a vertex amplitude. Well, and of course, again, a boundary term. So please go to the next slide. So can we now construct a Ricking map by using this amplitude? For this, in order to work, we of course first need to identify the boundary state of the spin form with states in the kinematical Hilbert space. So the main obstacle in doing this is if we look closely, then we see that canonical IPG is a continuum theory, although it has some discrete features, while the covariance theory is from the beginning a discrete theory because we started with a triangulation. This means that in the canonical theory, in order to quantize points separating star subalgebra of the classical Poisson algebra, we need to allow all possible graphs which can be embedded in the hypersurface sigma. But since the covariant model is based on two complexes dual to a triangulation, this restricts the sets of boundary graphs to those ones which are dual to triangulation of sigma. Since the smallest object with which we can triangulate a hypersurface sigma are tetrahedral, this means that the nodes are at least 4-valent. In the canonical theory, however, at least if we choose the regularization of Thomas, then the Hamiltonian generates 3-valent nodes, which is obviously a contradiction. Even though this last point can be resolved by considering another regularization of the Hamiltonian, the second point is much more profound because it's basically at the heart of canonical loop quantum gravity. And it should be also mentioned that the regularization of the Hamiltonian constraint by Thomas is by now the only one known which is anomaly free, even though there's, for example, the regularization by Emanuele on tetrahedra, which would then also generate 4-valent nodes. Well, other issues when trying to literally combine canonical and the canonical and the covariant approach is, for example, the question for the path integral measure, which is certainly not the usual Lebesgue measure since we have constraints. Well, and also since we start from different classical outsets, it is not clear what should be what's the fate of observables in the covariant model that comes from the canonical theory. And another question is whether all the simplicity constraints are implemented. So I don't want to focus on those last issues, but put more attention to the fact that we actually need to allow all possible graphs in the canonical theory, which forces us to generalize the model. So please go to slide number 9. So fortunately, such a generalization was already provided by Wojtek, Martin, and Jurek. And so we can use this generalization and see spin from some sort as a tool to determine the physical scalar product rather as something which strictly can be related to the canonical approach. So the achievements of the KKL model are twofold. The first thing is, as I already said, it allows to compute the amplitude for arbitrary two complex combinatorial two complexes, allowing for arbitrary boundary gaps. And the second thing is that it was proved in this paper that for a certain choice of the Barbero-Emilzi parameter, we can identify the graph the Hilbert space induced on the boundary of a given spin foam Gauss-Hilbert space in the of the canonical theory. Well, even though this the KKL model is defined for any arbitrary combinatorial two complexes, I will here restrict the set of two complexes a bit further and just consider abstract forms. By abstract forms, I mean an object that is piecewise linear homeomorphic to a piecewise linear two complex. So it's not really a piecewise linear two complex because we don't require the faces to be convex, but apart from that, we require all the properties of a piecewise linear two complex. So, and then the boundary of an abstract form is given by the disjoint union of closed graphs that border kappa. And by a graph bordering kappa, we mean that there exists a one-to-one affine map from gamma times 0, comma 1 to the complex kappa. Please go to the next slide. So even though we now have generalized the covariant model to abstract forms which are not embedded anymore, we cannot do the same for the canonical theory because we can, for certain operators, for example, the volume and therefore also the Hamiltonian, we actually need to work with embedded spin networks. So we have to do a bit more work in order to resolve this contradiction. This can be done by a similar construction as for the to implement the diffeomorphism constraint, and essentially also goes back to the ideas of a rigging map. So in order to do that, we first need to define abstract equivalence. So we call two embedded spin networks abstractly equivalent if they are obtained from the embedding of the same abstract spin network. So we can then define the spin from the rigging map in the following manner. So first consider the topological state S prime A, which is just given by a weight FRS prime, which I will set to 1 in the following, and the sum over all dual states associated to the spin networks in the abstract equivalence class of S prime. So then in order to obtain the full rigging map eta TS TS prime, we can just sum over all these dual states LS prime together with the weight, and the weight eta SS prime. So this weight eta SS prime is, of course, then just given by the sum over all forms we can glue between S and S prime. So for this, one can now access three different descriptions, basically, which are of the same form. First, the original one going back to Wojtek, Martin, and Jurek. Well, then there's a slightly different amplitude by Martin and Carlo. And then there exists also the operator spin form model by Benjamin Stank and again, the Polish group. So no matter how we choose this amplitude, we can choose it in such a way that, or we can always tune the phase and the edge amplitude in such a way that it has the following properties. Please go to the next slide. So, first of all, this amplitude is invariant if we add phases or remove phases labeled by the trivial representation. It is also invariant if we add or remove the internal edges that split just one phase, and if we add or remove two valent vertices. In other words, we can, if you see this amplitude set kappa a as a map from the graph Hilbert space of the graph underlying graph from the spin network S prime to the graph Hilbert space of the, for the spin network S, then this map is cylindrical consistent. Furthermore, we can find for each graph we can find a trivial form kappa zero such that this map just is the identity. So now note this equivalence relations, so they give rise to a huge equivalence class, and if we would sum over all the spin forms and not over the equivalence classes with respect to removing or adding faces and edges, then we would obtain a very highly divergent object. So in order not to do that, we have to restrict to minimal forms, where we call a form minimal if it cannot be obtained if one cannot remove any further elements of the form. So there's one remark which is important, though the minimal representative of a given form is not unique. However, the amplitude does not depend on the choice, so we can, in each class, can always fix a representative in always, on only some of this. So this will be always assumed throughout the following. Please go to the next slide. So there's another very important property, which plays a crucial for the rest of the talk, which I haven't mentioned yet, and that is the gluing property. Suppose we have two forms given by two forms which agree on a given boundary graph. So if you look at the picture on the left, then the outgoing spin network of the upper form, the ingoing spin network of the upper form agrees with the outgoing spin network of the lower form. So then we can just glue these complexes together by identifying the faces and the edges. By this we obtain an amplitude, and it can be seen as some sort of introducing. So the amplitude for the glue complex kappa 1 kappa. The outgoing spin network S prime of the former kappa 2. So this can be seen as some sort of introducing a resolution of or removing a resolution of the identity. So, please go to the next slide. Slide number 14. Are there questions so far? So if this is not the case, please let me go on. So and come to the second part. I will now explain why the object we have now defined does not provide proper rigging map in the sense that it does not project onto the kernel of the Hamiltonian constraint. Please go to slide number 15. So the main idea of doing this part now is...
So I was going to wait until the end, but I think now it is going to be important also for the audience. You keep speaking of the Hamiltonian constraint, but we don't have the Hamiltonian constraint. So what does this issue mean? In the very first part, you said, well, is the spin form amplitude compatible with the canonical picture? In the spin form side, you took specific amplitudes. First the EPRL, then FK, then generalized by KKL, and so on. And so there are very specific proposals. And on the left-hand side, on the canonical side, you're also fixing a proposal for Hamiltonian constraint?
No. So I was it would also be wrong to say this Hamiltonian constraint. I should have said F Hamiltonian constraint. On the canonical side, it's completely left arbitrary so far.
Okay, so
apart, I don't consider any special proposal for the Hamiltonian constraint. I will just, well, the argument is just that in general, it's for N, it will not be a projector, but what I have been constructing.
Okay, first of all, it's never a projector, right? I mean, that's, I wish that you stop, I mean, people stop using that term because it confuses people outside the community very much. Because they say that we are doing something trivial, because we know that it cannot be projector, because it is, none of these things are have finite norms in the kinematical Hilbert space anyway. So what you're trying to do is extract this amplitude, right? So the question is does it give you a solution? So the only question can be, does the spin form path integral give you a solution to the Hamiltonian constraint? But if in fact we don't have a candidate Hamiltonian constraint, then it seems a little bit too strong to me to say that there is no Hamilton, that there is, it is impossible to find a Hamiltonian constraint such that the spin form amplitude would be the extractor for that Hamiltonian constraint. Is that what you're saying? And that seems extremely strong to me.
Well, I'm gonna saying that the rigging map as I have proposed it does not alleviate the Hamiltonian constraint or a Hamiltonian constraint. So it is something wrong in my definition of the rigging map, and there's more work required. That's what I would say.
No, I still don't understand the logic.
I'm going to come to an extensive discussion of that.
I still don't understand the logic. So there is a rigging map that you define. I take it as face value. Then you want to say it does not satisfy the Hamiltonian constraint when you are not specified the Hamiltonian constraint. So how? I mean, I just don't understand the sentence, right? I mean, certainly there is some operator such that this rigging map is the solutions to the extracted state is in the kernel of that some operator, right? I mean. So there must be some conditions, right? They're saying that there is no Hamiltonian constraint which satisfies certain general conditions that you have implicitly in mind for which the rigging map does not give you elements of the kernel of that operator. I mean, it just seems to be an incredibly strong thing to say that I got some mapping and there is no operator whatsoever such that the solution is in the kernel of that operator.
Maybe let me, I would like to answer to that at the end of the talk.
Okay.
But isn't really the constraint is in the definition of the proposed rigging map. In Z itself, you have the Hamiltonian constraint in the action.
Yes. Sorry, what was the remark?
The remark was answering that question, that when you look at the proposed rigging map data, and you have the sum of Z's on the right hand side. So in the definition of Z, there is an action and there is a Hamiltonian constraint inside of it already.
Yes.
That's where it comes in actually. So that's where the Hamiltonian constraint is in the proposed rigging map, as I see.
So the conclusion I'm gonna draw is that the way I define the rigging map does not give me a rigging map in principle. So, but there's more work required in order to turn it into a rigging map. But the action of course comes in by acting on the state CS prime at the end.
Okay, so if I understand this, the comment and your reply to it, then you are saying that, well, look at this particular rigging, this particular spin form constructions, KKL construction, for example, and then by just looking at it, it seems to suggest an obvious Hamiltonian constraint. But in fact, that suggestion is not correct. Is that the way to say it? Because the comment was that, well, in the rigging map, there is a Hamiltonian constraint. So therefore, your remark is related to a specific Hamiltonian constraint, as opposed to what you were saying before, which was that you are giving the Hamiltonian constraint completely general.
Well, I would put it with, a bit differently. I assume some Hamiltonian constraint, and then I propose a rigging, or would be a rigging map for this sort of Hamiltonian constraint by summing over all spin forms. And the conclusion is that my suggestion doesn't work, but there's more work required.
Okay, please go on. We'll come back at the end. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, and maybe it may become clearer at the end. Okay, we are on slide 15. So, the idea is to simplify this, the sum over all two complexes I have been just suggesting by somehow trying to find a set of forms from which I can generate any form. And in order to make this work, I first have to introduce a sort of a splitting procedure. So how to split big forms into smaller parts. So in order to do that in a unique or well-defined way, I need to have a classification of the internal vertices. So, and this can be seen as some sort of time ordering. I call a vertex an internal vertex which has a connection by or which has one edge that joins the vertex with the vertex in the initial boundary, a vertex of first generation. Inversely, is a vertex of second generation is a vertex that has at least one edge joining this vertex with the vertex of first generation. And so on, I can define the nth generation of the vertex. If I have a form which only has a final graph, it just goes backward. And if I have a form which doesn't have a boundary at all, or a boundary in that vertex at all, then I call all internal vertices of first generation. So now I can prove the theorem that for each minimal form, can be uniquely split into subforms kappa e, which I will call one-time step forms, that only contain vertices of each generation with respect to the original form. That means that I can see kappa as the product of gluing n one-time step forms, where n is the maximal generation of kappa. So since I'm already running a bit of time, let me skip the proof of this theorem. So please go to slide number 19. So now I can use this splitting procedure in order to simplify the rigging map. However, in order to do that, I need to restrict to connected forms. So why can I do this? If Eta would be really a rigging map, then the top identity would must hold. So that means if I act with H on any given element of the kinematic Hilbert space, then Eta PSF H PSI must be zero. So now assume that the final spin network is given by the vacuum spin network, which I here denoted as empty set. Then I can see that I can decompose this rigging map into some sort of matrix where the sum is only is only going over connected forms, and I get a power of some sort of vacuum bubbles, which the forms which don't have boundary gaps at all. So, but if this is going to be zero, then it means that already HRC on the vacuum spin network must be zero when I'm acting with H on the ingoing spin network. And by this argument, I can show that it suffices in order to test whether my map really defines me a rigging map to only consider connected forms. However, there's a problem because when I'm splitting a connected form into one-time step forms, I may end up with one-time step forms that are not necessarily connected. How can that happen? For example, if I slice several times through a donut, I might obtain parts which are disconnected. However, if we exclude the vacuum to the network, and we also suppose that either the final or the initial spin network are connected, then the glued form must be connected. So that means in the following we can test, in order to test whether our map design is really a rigging map, it suffices to test whether SRC of TSF ameliorates the Hamiltonian for any spin network SF with connected gas gamma SF. Please go to slide number 20. So in order to further simplify that, we can now introduce the spin form transfer matrix. This is essentially obtained by summing over all forms that fit between single prime set forms that fit between the boundary networks gamma and gamma prime, and summing over all graphs gamma and gamma prime. The P of gamma is the projector from the kinematical space, full kinematical space to the graph Hilbert space on gamma. When we then insert it in the rigging map SRC, we obtain, we see that we can write this rigging map as a power series of Zn. So note that this above this factorization would not work if we could not restrict to connected forms, because then we would get ordering ambiguities for disconnected forms. Well, and the second thing to note, which is important in the following, is that that is the metric. This first follows from the direct model of the spin form, but it's also a prerequisite that ETA defines the square linear form so that we can interpret it as a scalar product. So please go to slide number 21. So now the naive argument why it cannot be a proper rigging map is that if we then try to assume that the SRC of on TSF with evaluated on HCSI gives zero, then we obtain a contradiction. And if we denote the sum, the power series of Zn as A, then we can conclude that A equals 1 plus ZA. So, and if A annihilates H, then this obviously leads to a contradiction, because that would mean that the Hamiltonian itself is zero. Of course, this is only a formal expression, because, well, Z and therefore also the sum is very likely divergent, and therefore it requires a regularization. Please go to slide number 22. In order to regularize that, we could, for example, introduce in order to render the set of one prime set forms finite. That means we could introduce a cutoff in the labeling, here denoted by J, and the cutoff in the number of internal faces and internal edges. However, this still doesn't guarantee that the transfer metric set is densely defined, but we very likely would need to introduce a weight for each form. So suppose we can introduce a weight which also shows the gluing property, namely that the weight for the glued complex kappa shards kappa prime is the same as the weight for kappa and kappa prime, so kappa times kappa prime, then we can define a regularized transfer metric set prime just weighting the amplitude. So now, even if that prime is densely defined, it doesn't mean that the powers of that prime are densely defined. However, since that is a metric, we can assume that that prime can be extended to itself a joint operator with the projection valued measure E. So then we can let then set X on a state CQ defined by integrating within the range of minus QQ over the kinematical space by a multiplication with lambda. So that means that if we apply again our the power series of Z, we obtain an equation for the geometric series and find again that A must be equal to 1 plus ZA, and this again leads to a contradiction. So please go to the next slide. So let me now go to the discuss what is going wrong in our rigging map or our proposed rigging map. So please go to slide number 24. So essentially, there can be identified four reasons about what is going to be missing in our definition. It's, well, first of all, it could be that the spin-form transparent set is itself a projector. And that means it doesn't make much sense to take the power series, and especially one should exclude the zeroth order. The second option is that the vertex amplitude is too local in order that it allows for the splitting, and so it allows to derive the spin-form transparent set. The third possibility is that that maybe the simplicity constraints are not does not suffice in order to restrict really to a spin form which for the canonical theory. And the fourth option is that we assume the sum the wrong weight, so that maybe also the weight is, does not fulfill a gluing property, so that I cannot regularize this expression as I have assumed and before. So let us look a bit more in detail at that options and go to slide 25. So there are several, there are essentially two hints, which hint that SET itself could be a projector. For example, I've been showing with Emanuele and Thomas that if one chooses the Barberio-Mesile parameter to be equal to 1 and restricts the set of foams to a specific class, and he's called melon foams, then one can show that the sum actually annihilates the Euclidean Hamiltonian constraint. Here, the specific foams are foams which just have one internal vertex and boundary graph as shown on the right-hand side. So a melon graph, and a melon graph is an additional edge. The second thing is that one could think about the set as some sort of object obtained from cross-graining. So, for example, Bianca, Frank, and Wojtek derived some sort of a similar object. It's not the same, but somehow following similar ideas for their so-called holonomy spinform model via cross-graining. And for Bayes theory, this already incorporates the dynamics and should solve the constraints, therefore. However, if we look again from the heuristic interpretation of the spin forms as the Feynman graphs for the canonical theory, then it is not really clear why we first should exclude the zeroth order and why we should only sum over one times or should only consider one time set forms and not all kinds of forms. Please go to the next slide. Well, the second option is, as I said, that the vertex amplitude is too local in the sense that it allows for splitting. Well, if I look at the vertex amplitudes of two vertices with an edge E in between, then I can insert a new vertex M and just draw them apart by the green relation on the second side. So if it would not proportional to each other, then the splitting would not be possible. So by this one should note, that's why I put the not proportional, is that if it's just not equal, but the factors for which it is not equal can be assigned to the splitting network, then one could still make sense of the spin form transfer matrix by a proper regularization. There are other hints that the vertex amplitude might be too local, which come from completely different considerations. There's first of all a paper by Bianca, where she pointed out that for the digital morphism invariant on the lattice, it might be necessary to have a more non-local action. And there's also a latest argument by Wojtek and Frank if one wants to avoid this strong curvature constraint in the asymptotic, that it might be necessary to allow more non-local vertex amplitudes. However, they come from pretty different considerations than ours. So please go to the next slide, slide 27. If we look heuristically and think of the spin forms defined as a delta function for the constraint, then by expanding it in single time steps, in time steps, so taking the integral over specific time steps, we can derive unitary matrices Q and Q beta, and while this delta function should then depend on the sum of UK, on the powers of UK plus U beta K. However, since that is a metric, this is not really the case. We now have a power on the sum of U plus U beta to the power K. And so it seems that we only took the cosine, so the extension of the cosine, then the extension of the exponential. So something similar happens in the asymptotic expansions where of the force matrix amplitude, and one also assigns a cosine rather than an exponential. So as just pointed out by Jonathan, this can be an effect that the simplicity constraint allows certain mixing of the orientation of the tetra with the Plebansky sectors that then the resulting action is only equivalent to the Einstein-Hilbert action up to a sign. Well, then, as it was proposed by Jonathan, one can cure this by imposing an additional condition to project onto the proper vertex amplitude. Well, it would be, of course, interesting to see whether this could, in general, cure the futures of our proposed rigging map. So please go to the next slide. Option four, and it is certainly one of the most interesting things, is we just introduced the weight ad hoc without much justification, just in order to see whether how we can turn that into a well-defined object. So then it's of course questionable whether the assumption that the weight of some gluing property is really sensible. So if we again look at the regularization of sort of delta function, then we would need to include some sort of symmetry factors, 1/n, which certainly does not obey a gluing property in this sense. And for example, in standard GFT nucleus theory with just one interaction term and a four-valent interaction, then one recovers also a symmetry factor, which depends first on the coupling constant lambda to the power of vertices in the GFT graph, and divided by the order of the symmetry group of gamma. So the symmetry group of gamma does certainly not obey some sort of gluing property. The second hint why there could be a problem with our assumption comes from bubbles. So we know that the spin form amplitude suffer from bubble divergences, where a bubble is something where the phases are disconnected from the boundary graph, so that I can sum over all spins. However, in the framework I have proposed, it is not clear that one can just exclude such bubbles, because it might be possible that even if the single forms kappa 1 and kappa 2 don't contain bubbles, this glued form might contain a bubble. So this might destroy also the gluing property, respectively the unique splitting. The open questions in this context, especially for the regularization, there has been a lot of work done for regularizing the spin form amplitude, so it would be certainly very helpful to look closer at that. For example, to explore the generalized group field theory, as suggested by Daniele, and also to explore the latest results on the and the unregularization of the ETL model, such as brought out by many people. So, and another thing which is also interesting in this case is to further explore the connection to coarse graining and maybe the holonomy skinform model. Another project would be to take this proper vertex idea of Jonathan more seriously. And well, for this one, would first try to generalize Jonathan's proposals to n-valent vertices, and then test whether this modified rigging map can be still factorized in the form above, or whether this destroys this property. Well, and then there are certainly also the technical aspects which are interesting. So this single time step forms enable us to have a better control on the sum. And for example, one could try to find a formalism to design this single time step form, for example, by also using the suggestion by Marcin, Jurek, and Jacek. Yeah, well, thanks for your attention. So,
please go to
slide 30. Questions? So I would like to go back to my question, because it seemed to me that what you were saying and what the commenter said were incompatible. So if you can go back to slide 19.
Yes.
Okay, so at the top, you say that that given map eta, which you detect from spin forms, is rigging if and only if that condition is satisfied. But that condition requires an operator H hat.
Yes.
So what is H hat provided to you? Is H hat general?
H
hat?
I don't need to specify H hat in this argument with the factorization.
So is your result that independent of what the Hamiltonian constraint is,
yes,
the rigging map would not give you the extraction amplitude and the physical inner product?
Yes, as long as I have this gluing, or as long as I can factorize the rigging map as I have been shown, it would not give me, as long as I could factorize this eta, it would not give me a proper rigging map. Hamiltonian.
But then a little bit later, when you're talking about the options, let me say which slide it is, this is slide 25.
Yes.
And here you say that it can be shown that for beta equal to 1, for beta equal to 1, it's compatible. That is to say, are you saying that for beta equal to 1, there is no problem with the rigging map? Just look at this one vertex melons that you're looking at. Or are you saying that, go ahead.
Well, this is a specific, it's an explicit calculation, and it uses a specific form of the Hamiltonian and a specific form of the spin form amplitude.
Okay, so here you're talking about specific form, a form of the Hamiltonian constraint. But you're saying that any form of the Hamiltonian constraint. Okay, but then, as you said, that the heuristic argument is too heuristic, right? Because it is it's just an infinite sum. I mean, one can prove that with infinite series, we can prove anything we want, right? I mean, divergent infinite series by just factoring them. Go ahead.
So my point is that if we want something which can potentially give us a rigging map for the canonical theory, then we should not ask for the gluing property.
Okay. And how much of this is tied to using the KKL framework. In other words, first of all, I want to say that this is fantastic, you know, to be able to try to bridge the, what is happening in the canonical picture with what is happening with the spin form picture. This, I think it's overdue, and it's very, very nice that all this work is very nice. I'm just trying to understand it. So if I go back to the sort of the original, the first few transparencies you had, we don't have to go, I mean, not explicitly, but the content of that was that, well, you said that the EPRL or FK, they use some simplicities, and you would like to use very general, I guess this is number eight, slide number eight, you would like to use much more general two complexes, which don't come from a simplicial decomposition, right?
Yes.
But one could take the point of view, you know, motivated by, again, some pointers that we have from the continuum limit analysis, that, in fact, to take that continuum limit in the spin form language, maybe we have to use a directed method. In other words, we have to take a limit in certain sense. We cannot use arbitrary two complexes. The problem is just too uncontrolled, right?
Yes.
So, okay. So therefore, if I take that point of view, that then I could just consider the simplicial decomposition. And I'm just going to consider everything that comes, say, EPRL or FK, without the KKL generalization. So just looking at the simplicities. Then, does your argument still apply in that case? Or this whole big thing, argument of factorization, is really tied more to the KKL generalization?
Well, okay, let me two comments. First of all, I mean, I choose especially the KKL model because I built my argumentation from this, from a scene from the canonical theory. So I could, of course, say the other way around, what is the correct canonical theory for the spin forms? Well, I'm going a bit the other way around. That's why I'm requiring all possible graphs. So the second thing is, if I would restrict the canonical theory on a certain set of graphs, namely those ones which are dual to a triangulation, this would not change the picture in principle. Because, well, yeah, if I restrict the two complexes, I also restrict the boundary graphs, and I can still glue along the boundary graphs. The only thing which then additionally comes in, which might be more tricky, is that actually the splitting graphs, or the graphs which I obtain when I'm splitting through the complex, also belongs to that class. This would be something which one would need to prove separately, but I don't see in principle a problem of that.
Okay, so last question. Field theories have, you know, like rigorous field theories, like those who construct the kind of field theory and so on, they often sort of complain that, well, if I just consider general general decomposition, you know, in terms of complexes, not regular simplicities, but just complexes, then for four manifolds, it's not even classified how many there are. And so if I just looked at the boundaries, and if I look try to fit them, right, then the statement is that, well, I have no idea. I mean, it's not even classified. They're not certainly not countable. And yet, your basic formula that you use, for example, in the naive argument, but also in the precise argument, it's just a countable sum. So how do you resolve this tension?
Where do you mean the countable sum?
21, for example, slide. And then there's a version of it also after regularization, but you have got this summation n equal to 0 to infinity, so you are basically saying that I got this insertion. So there's something that is, I don't understand, basically, that if I have just the boundary graphs that are given to me, and if I look at all possible fillings without referring to simplicial decomposition, then I get uncountably many fillings in between. How can that sum become so well controlled in terms of a countable sum?
Because the incountability is in the Z. In the Z operator, I sum over all single time step forms, and they are uncountable many.
Red operator. What transparency is it?
The slide before, 20. So the Z operator itself is incountable because, well, yeah. So I'm just summing over all possible graph stretches, and then I'm summing over all single time step forms.
If it is an uncountable sum, then even after regularization, I really can't imagine I can have control on that. I mean, I'm asking questions at not any deep technical level, just kind of how do I understand intuitively that something which is totally uncountable sum is being so well controlled? Why is it not just infinity equal to infinity and therefore...
I'm doing two things. I'm restricting to abstract graphs, so abstract equivalence classes. So, and then
but I don't think people would give you that even if you look at abstract equivalence class, if you consider general complexes, not simplicial decomposition, but general, that people will not, unless you correct me, but I just heard this criticism from quantum field theories, that diffeomorphism doesn't really help you with respect to this. But maybe somebody else who knows about mathematics much better can correct us, can correct me.
This goes also by requiring that I have something which is sort of precise linear complex. I also impose that there are finite precise linear complexes, so that I only have finite sums. So I restrict it to a countable set from the beginning.
Right. So that is not a full answer anyway. Right. I mean that is a little like a certain truncation, right, of the full answer.
Some sort of
yes. So therefore, shouldn't that be highlighted somehow, saying that, well, provided a truncation is made in this particular way, then the rigging map seems to have a problem that there's no Hamiltonian constraint. But I mean, to me there seems to be a conceptual tension on your desire to look at loop quantum gravity as it was first formulated in terms of piecewise analytic category, which allows all possible things and uncountable sums, and the final result. So if you want to have really insisting on loop quantum gravity, these uncountable things, then I think the final result has an important caveat, which was not stated. Again, I'm not saying this is correct. I'm just expressing my understanding, and of course, I would like to be corrected if I'm wrong. Okay, I think, in view of time, we can certainly continue discussing on email or by Skype or something. But I just want to conclude by expressing my deep appreciation of, this is very, very nice work in which one is trying to bridge the two. And of course, there are going to be issues in the beginning. There's just no question about it. So maybe I should just conclude. Thank you very much.
More questions? If there are no more questions, let's thank Antonio again.